This is Radio Superior 1928, a reproduction of actual news events with authentic popular music from the Roaring Twenties. This is a true story of our past, so step back with us to another time. We bring you now inside the KUWS radio studios and the Martin and McKenna Show.
Station KUWS calling from Superior, Wisconsin. Jack McKenna speaking. It's Saturday, June 16th, 1928. Lou Martin has the 5 o'clock news report about President Coolidge and Brule, and we have two very special guests, one a fishing guide from the Brule River.
Does this guy know how to fish?
Of course, of course. He's tops with the trout. And we'll have a distant relative of President Coolidge who's a barber in Lake Nebagamon, plus the hits of the Roaring Twenties. The 5 o'clock news report is presented by Merrill McMahon Used Cars, with a Maxwell touring car on sale for just $125. Good afternoon, Lou.
Good evening, Jack, and good listeners. President Coolidge is settling in at the Pierce Estate on the Brule River. Senator Charles Curtis is nominated as the Republican vice presidential candidate. And we have a story about the time that President McKinley visited Superior. Our first report on the president's full first day in Wisconsin's North Woods comes from Clough Gates of the Superior Evening Telegram. Good afternoon.
Top of the afternoon, Lou. Mrs. Calvin Coolidge stepped off the presidential special at Winnebajou Station at 11:12 yesterday morning. She looked about at the small crowd of Army men, officials, and spectators, threw her arms up to them, gave a gracious smile, and entered the open touring car. Her White House chauffeur whisked Mrs. Coolidge away to the lodge. As early as 7 o'clock, several officials and trained men were at the crossing. A little later, Captain E.P. O'Brien, who is commandant of the summer White House Guard, posted his Army troops around the crossing and all nearby roads. They had strict orders to stop all traffic on the roads and highways and to prevent cars from parking. Sheriff H.A. Turnbull and his deputies were also early on the scene. At 10:40 came a line of cars, the second bearing the president. He waved, he smiled at the crowd. Many took off their hats and they waved back. Half a dozen cars full of officials and newspapermen followed the president. Finally, a long whistle told them Mrs. Coolidge was nearing Winnebajou. Two collie dogs in tow of a Negro servant appeared on the back landing of the last car, just in front of the automobile, which was to take Mrs. Coolidge to the lodge. The dogs, one black, one white, seemed to like their new surroundings and pranced around the landing. Mrs. Coolidge glanced at the 100 or less in the group who lifted their hats in a salute to the First Lady. Apparently, she is in good health, though tired after the long ride from Washington. Crossing the few steps to the car, she seated herself in the back seat, two Secret Service men getting in the front seat. Meanwhile, the two collies had spied an ordinary spaniel, probably belonging to a Democrat in the crowd. They growled and barked. A dogfight seemed imminent until the Negro servant got the White House dogs under control. After a 5-minute wait, Mrs. Coolidge's car started across the tracks with one other car and two motorcycle officers, and disappeared over the little hill on its way to the lodge. There, she found the president waiting for her, sitting on the porch, chatting with Superintendent Lambert. President Coolidge walked across the little rustic bridge, meeting her in front of the much-described Pierce Dining Hall. When the president first arrived at the lodge at 10:55, he posed in front of the main lodge for the newspaper and newsreel photographers. "Did you get that fish?" he asked a photographer who had been snapping right and left as one of the signally honored presidential trout made a flip-flop on the quiet surface of the Brule River. The president appeared to be greatly pleased with his summer camp, anticipating many great catches. This is your reporter, Clough Gates.
This is Telegram reporter Paul Scamser. Railroad men who moved the president's train will have something to talk about as they sit around division hotels and roundhouses. Runs where the train is given the clear right-of-way with a pilot engine ahead do not come every day. Above all, when the privilege is merely adjunct to carrying the president, it is indeed a day to be remembered. In fact, it is probable that other employees will long be tired of hearing the tale. Chances are large that when the hogger and the tallow pot climbed into the cab, one of them remarked, "We own the railroad. Let's go." And they were veritably right. Over the entire Omaha Railroad, everything was in readiness for the passage of the train. Switches that were not spiked were carefully watched. For days, section crews had gone over the roadbed, fixing up the high joints. The pilot train was pulled by A.P. Johnson of Eau Claire from Elroy, Wisconsin, where the train was taken over by the Northwestern proper. Bawling the Black Diamond was H.H. Mulfaney of Spooner, who had an easy job compared to the same trip he had made often enough, keeping up steam with 3,000 tons of freight dragging at the peg on the steam gauge. Duluthian's John Enochson was conductor on the pilot train, while William Jepson and Joseph Kosky were the brakemen. At the throttle of the special 9-car train was Harry Tinker of Eau Claire, veteran hoghead on Chicago passenger runs. Clarence Hogberg of Minneapolis was on the other side of the cab. Jim Boyle of Duluth was the conductor, and George Cochran and David Pepin of Duluth the brakemen. Your reporter, Paul Scamser, signing off.
On schedule to the minute, the President Coolidge Special rolled quietly through several Wisconsin towns during the early morning hours. Even though the President and First Lady were sleeping, thousands of people lined the route in Chippewa Falls, Bloomer, and Chautauqua. Although Rice Lake citizens didn't get a glimpse of the presidential party, they did get a chance to see the first dog, famous Coolidge Collie Rob Roy, sniffed the morning air on the observation platform. Throngs watched the presidential train roll through Minong, Gordon, and Solon Springs, cheering the president, even though he remained inside and unseen. KUWS Radio News Time is 5:10. Jack McKenna has this word from Merrill McMahon's used cars.
Indeed I have, Lou. Yes, indeed. Look at these cars, folks. Look at these cars. Listen to me now. Merrill and McMahon used cars at 2111 East 5th Street in Superior has the following cars in their lot just for you. Pontiac Coupe, $650. A Hudson Sedan, $289. A Studebaker Coach, I used to have one of those, $549. Hupmobile Touring Car, $85. An Oakland touring car, $69. And so it goes, folks. Always a good deal from Merrill and McMahon used cars in Superior.
In national news, the Republican National Convention adjourned yesterday, ending with the nomination of Senator Charles Curtis of Kansas for vice president. Things were less peaceful at the Democratic side after a day of factional clashes, fist fights, jeering, and heckling of speakers. The Kentucky Democratic Convention voted to pledge its 26 national delegates to Governor Alfred Smith of New York. The first of the four fist fights came when two rivals for the leadership in Fayette County, they questioned each other's statements. They were parted after several blows were struck and after many women fainted. Representative Fred Vincent from the 9th District was in another encounter. His opponent, a delegate whose name has not been learned. Congressman Vincent is said to have been the victor. The arrival of the president yesterday is the second time in Superior's history that a president has visited the city while he was in office. The other president was William McKinley. He came here in the autumn of 1899. He remained for 15 minutes, long enough to receive a rousing welcome and make a short speech. President McKinley arrived at the same depot that President Coolidge came into, the Omaha Depot. One other president visited Superior. That was Theodore Roosevelt. He came here in 1912, spoke at the old Grand Opera House, and departed. Superior is all agog over the visit of the First Lady. Telegram Society reporter Frances Risden has the story.
Yes, Thank you, Mr. Martin. Indeed, the smile of the First Lady of the land won her a permanent place in the hearts of those who were fortunate enough to catch a glimpse of her as the presidential train pulled into Superior. A reception committee of Superior women, headed by Mrs. Irvin Lenroot, who carried a sheaf of American Beauty roses for Mrs. Coolidge, and Mrs. J.T. Murphy. Also on the committee were Mrs. Fred Hansen, Mrs. Herman Aronson, Miss Lulu Pickett, Mrs. George Hawley, Mrs. E.S. Geraldson, and Mrs. L.C. Lounsbury. The first sight spectators received of the First Lady and the President came as the train of 8 coaches and a baggage car pulled slowly in, and the observation platform of the private car finally came into view. On the platform were the President, with Mrs. Coolidge standing at his left. Grace was all and more than Superior women had anticipated, for the popular First Lady has long been admired at a distance by the women of the city. Many were the approving comments made on all sides, first about the general attractiveness of her appearance, and later about her apparent delight in everything that was going on. When the crowd was forced back to make a lane for the President, Mrs. Lenroot mounted the steps to the observation platform to present Mrs. Coolidge with the roses on behalf of the women of Superior and said a few words of welcome. Grace smiled as she took the roses and nodded appreciation to the women gathered on the platform. Gowned in rose-tan tweed of a rich shade with hat to match, Mrs. Coolidge made an especially attractive picture as she stood holding the huge sheaf of roses. She wore a simply tailored suit of the tweed, the jacket of which was slightly beyond waist length. The collar was cut in a modified Prince of Wales fashion and turned back to reveal a satin frock of Chanel red, fashioned with round neck. A tiny, slit pocket in the upper left side of the jacket disclosed the corner of a white linen handkerchief. Her hat, a small, close-fitting model, was of satin, a shade lighter than her dress, and the brim of the satin was rolled away from her face on the left side. The crown was covered with 3-inch petals of pale rose-beige taffeta. Her skirt was worn at a medium length, and her footwear consisted of black chiffon hose and black kid Cuban-heeled Oxfords with open work on each side. According to attendants on the train, Mrs. Coolidge stood on the trip very well, much better than was anticipated when the party left Washington, when she retired immediately after boarding the train. On account of her limited strength, it was thought best by her physician that she remain on the train during the trip to the lodge rather than drive out with the President. She was reluctant, but finally decided to make the trip by train, Lewis.
Superior Evening Telegram Society reporter Francis Risden. That's the evening news, Jack.
How come Harriet didn't do that report?
I think that we're very fortunate to have Mrs. Risden do that excellent report for us.
Oh, no offense, but I thought you thought that Harriet was the cat's meow. No offense, Mrs. Ribsden.
Well, you'll be hearing from me in my column. Good day.
You sure have a way with the ladies.
Well, I'm glad I'll only be hearing from her in her column. She's rather painful to hear from in person. On with the weather. It's June and it's beautiful outside. Fair skies tonight and sunny tomorrow at the head of the lakes. Expect a high temperature of, about 77 degrees. And it's music time. Let's kick up our heels to Billy Murray with vocals by Jack Shilkret and If You Knew Susie on the Martin and McKenna No Offense Show.
Thank you. Shakespeare, she's a wow.
Wow!
Though all of you may know her too, I'd like to shout right now. If you knew Susie like I know Susie, oh, 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 what a girl. Though she gets sassy, I'll say she's classy. Oh, oh, you can bet I love this lassie. We went riding, she didn't fall. Back to the city, I'm the one that had to walk. If you knew Susie like I know Susie, oh, oh, what a girl.
Murray, and if you knew Susie on station KUWS. Friends, shop Siegel Brothers Clothing Store, where they have work shirts on sale. Union made, full cut for just 69 cents each. Can you believe it? Siegel Brothers, 720 Tower Avenue, since 1890.
While Superior was welcoming President Coolidge, his executive aides were hurrying to ready the summer White House at Central High School. Members of the president's staff went immediately to the high school after getting off of the train. Presidential Secretary Everett Sanders is expected to arrive from Kansas City, where he was at the Republican convention. He'll be in charge of the summer White House. It isn't known yet when Mr. Coolidge will make his first visit.
I wonder if the president will sit in one of those wooden desks with the inkwell, just like the ones we used to sit in, Luke.
I don't think so, Jack.
Ah, I suppose not. There's too much gum under those old desks. Here's Sophie Tucker and old King Tut from 1924 on the Martin and McKenna Show.
3,000 years ago, King Tut he reigned, you know. He must have traveled greatly in his time. For in his tomb out there was gold and silverware from big hotels of every land and clime. While going through his royal robes, they found up in his sleeve the first big leaf that Adam gave to Eve. In old King Tut, 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 and Cayman's day, beneath the tropic sky, King Tut, Tut was very wise. Now old King Tut, Tut, Tut was always gay. Cleopatra, she sat upon his knee. That's where she sat. The girls would dance for him and every move a treat. They'd move and move and move, but never move their feet. 1,000 girls would dance each day with lots of hip, 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 hooray. In old King Tut, 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 King Tut is day. 3,000 years ago, in history we know, King Tut and Cayman ruled a mighty land. He ruled for many years, mid laughter, song and tears. He made a record that will always stand. They opened up his tomb the other day and jumped with glee. They learned a lot of ancient history. In old King Tut, 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 and Cayman's day, the dancers then in style would even make the old Sphinx smile. In old King Tut, 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 and Cayman's day, on the desert sand, old King Tut's band played while maidens swayed. They danced for old King Tut 'neath moonlight skies so warm. They wore such happy smiles and were in perfect form. They danced for him both fat and thin. He didn't give a darn what shape they're in. In old King Tut, 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 King Tut is day. Not run 1, 2, 3. Oh, what a march it'd be for old Mark Anthony. A real Egyptian well-dressed man wore nothing but a coat of tan in old King Tut, 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 King Tutty's day.
Hey, yeah, folks. Sophie Tucker and old King Tut. Our next guest, and Lou, this is just unbelievable. I'm so doggone excited. Our next guest is a long-lost relative of President Coolidge. Say hello to Harvey F. Knowles, a barber. I saw what I said, a barber from Lake Nabagaman.
Yeah, hello back at you, Yak.
You mean to tell me you've got a Scandinavian barber from Lake Nabagaman?
That's me all over again.
He says he's a relative of the
Unbelievable,
president.
Unbelievable, isn't it, huh?
As a matter of fact...
Hey, say... Nice full head of hair you got there, Mr. Lou Martin. But those eyebrows, they need some trimming. Yeah, sure, I got
that. Not to mention his nose hairs.
My nose hairs are fine.
So, Harvey, how do you come to be related to the president anyway?
What do you mean, how did he come to be related to the president? It isn't up to him.
Well, you know, that's a good question, Yak. I'm not all that clear on it.
Yet he's on our radio show posing as a relative. I bet that you've never been to Vermont, where the president's family hails from.
I haven't either.
What do you mean I haven't either? You're not claiming to be a relative of President Calvin Coolidge.
It'd be fun to go there sometime, though.
Well, nope, I've never been to Vermont, but this is the way I figure it. And mind you, I'm not just bragging about him being kin. No, sirree. I'm not all that well posted on it. But anyway, here goes. I was born in Minnesota, about 20 miles south of St. Paul. I recall hearing about having an ancestor who had the Franklin name, which is part of the Coolidge ancestry. Well, sir, I remember the letter saying... how this ancestor was a sister of another one that married somebody, but it would be more than I can remember to tell the exact way of it. But I can get back to you on that.
Well,
fascinating. We're sitting next to a guy whose sister is married to the Coolidges. So how'd you end up in Lake Nabagaman?
Well, about 7 years ago, I came to a town intending on staying, you know, just a few weeks. Well, sir, I liked it so much I stayed. Now I'm the village barber.
Who thinks he's related to the president? Any relation to Napoleon?
Are you?
No, not that I know of, but, you know, in some way, the way I got it figured, we're all related.
Ever meet Cousin Coolidge?
Cousin Coolidge? That's just perfect.
Never seen him. I seen President Taft, though.
Maybe he'll swing by the barber shop for a haircut.
Taft?
No, Coolidge.
That'd be something, wouldn't it? Well, I got to be going. Saturday nights are busy at the barber shop. I can take care of those nose hairs there, Lewis. So long, fellas.
Harvey F. Knowles, a man who can call the president cuz.
I've had about enough.
On with the music, folks. Some good Saturday night music. Here's the California Ramblers and Charleston on the Martin and McKenna Show. The California Ramblers and Charleston on station KUWS.
Let me introduce a guest whose background has been checked and is the real thing.
George W. Hun of Lake Nabagamon at your service. Hun puts the fun in fishing is my motto.
Another guy from Lake Nabagamon, eh? Are you related to any presidents?
My brother was the president of the Moose Lodge.
Very interesting, Mr. Hun.
You can call me Honey. All my friends do.
I'd rather not.
Oh, go ahead. It'll make Harriet jealous.
Okay, honey, tell the listeners what makes a good fishing guide.
He has to be a good cook. That's the first thing. And I'm not talking out of turn when I tell you I'm a honey at pan-frying fish. Then he has to know the river. He has to know the channels and the rocks. He has to know how to handle a boat, paddling and poling both. How to handle it in fast water and the rapids.
Are there many rapids that the president should be concerned about, honey?
There is one on the way down to Winnebago. The river falls about 8 feet in a distance of 30 feet. Then there's the big rapids. Then a big, long stretch of water. Then there's the Wildcat Rapids. They're pretty swift.
But the river isn't all rapids.
No, sir. Wouldn't be good fishing spots if it was all shooting the rapids. We usually start out at Valley Farm Resort and head for Winnebago. That's about a 17-mile stretch. I'd say there's a good 15 nice spots to stop and have lunch along the way.
Oh, boy, he's your kind of guide, Lou. Imagine having 15 lunches.
They all have fireplaces, cold water springs, and tables. Some are even screened in. I know, I grew up on the Brule. I started guiding 6 years back and been at it ever since. Not a bad living. I charge $5 a day, and it costs $1 for a boat.
Did you ever tip over in the rapids, honey?
Nope, but I did come close once. We were shooting the big lake rapids when my party hooked a 4-pound Lochlaven trout. It pretty near pulled us over to one side while we were running near the rocks. Close call, I can tell you. Lots of guides and fishermen have tipped over, but not old George here.
I thought you liked to be called Honey, not George.
No one calls me Honey. But I bet a guy 6 bits I'd get Lou Martin to call me Honey on the air.
I guess that wraps things up. Thank you, Mr. George Honey Hun, Brule fishing guide from Lake Nabagamon.
Hey, cheer up. I brought some nice smoked trout for you fellas, and some Limburger cheese and hardtack to go with it. Enjoy.
My favorite.
I love smoked trout. The cheese is all yours, Jack.
Let's enjoy our last song of this fine Saturday evening, friends. Here's Paul Whiteman and Birth of the Blues on the Honey Bun Martin and McKenna Show.
Thank you.
Chapman and the Birth of the Blues on station KUWS. And that's a wrap this week, folks. Stay tuned for the United States Navy Band, Uncle Bob, and the Old Gray Mare Club. We'll be back same time, same place on your radio dial, the good Lord willing, and Lou doesn't call the wrong guy honey.
Boy, this trout is good.
Sure you don't want any Limburger?
No. Keep it away from me.
It's great on hardtack.
You've been listening to Radio Superior 1928, an original production by KUWS Radio and Wisconsin Public Radio. Radio Superior is produced and written by Mike Simonson. Other performances by Ray Paulson, Kathy Loxo, and Eric Olson. All events reported on Radio Superior 1928 are actual accounts from the Superior Evening Telegram. This is your announcer, Mark Snow, speaking. Good night.